Hi, I'm Lauren Gilger, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each Friday, we review the biggest stories of the week with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here is this week's episode.
I believe that when all those ballots are counted, a poor Latino boy who grew up sleeping on the floor will be headed to the floor of the United States Senate.
You know what I believe in? Fair and honest elections. That way we can vote the losers out and keep the winners. How's that?
I think the idea that we as individuals should have the freedom to make decisions about our healthcare without government interference is something that resonates across the spectrum.
Stay tuned. We will be exploring several options for a response to the passage of 139. This is far from over.
Feel optimistic. I mean, as much as you can with these things, it just certainly feels like the batches are trending our way and the races are close.
A significant number of issues that were referred directly by the legislature to the ballot. I suspect that we could see something like that again, where they try to bypass the governor altogether and place issues on the ballot. I think it'll be a contentious cycle.
And before we get to our newscap guest this morning, a quick update on the Titus races as votes continue to be counted in Arizona. Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego maintained his lead over Kari Lake by just over 4,000 votes in the Senate race, though that lead narrowed. And Democrat Kirsten Engel retook her lead over incumbent Republican Juan Ciscomani in a southern Arizona congressional district. But at this point, those might be the only bright spots for Democrats, though ballots continue to be counted, so you never know. It's looking like Democratic challenger Amish Shah will not unseat David Schweikert in Congressional District 1. And Tim Stringham, the Democrat who took on Republican Justin Heap to run elections at the Maricopa County Recorder's Office, looks like he might lose that race. On the legislative front, after millions being spent by Democratic groups to tie or take one of the chambers of the state legislature, it's looking like Republicans will remain in control, maybe even with more seats than before in the House. So here to talk all about all of this, we are joined now by two politicos from both sides of the aisle who likely have not gotten a lot of sleep this week. We have Democratic consultant Gael Esposito with Creaso Partners. Thanks for coming in.
Always glad to be here.
And High Ground's Paul Bentz. Hi there, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
Good morning to you both. You made it through election night. Thank you for being here. And I want to start with where we are. This is not all of the votes to be counted yet, despite the 97 or 98% precincts reporting, it says on the Secretary of State's website, right? Still about 30% of votes to be counted. Where are those votes coming from, Gail?
Yeah, so those are going to be those late earlies that everybody talks about. The ballots dropped off at Election Day, those people who were holding on to that two-page ballot and really making sure that they made the right decisions. And what we've seen traditionally in Arizona prior to the COVID election cycles here was those ballots breaking pretty heavily for Democrats. Mm-hmm. And it looks like those votes, we'll see when they're actually counted, but it looks like those votes are going to be very beneficial to the Democratic candidates that are out there. So we'll see when they're counted. But yeah, we've got still a long way to go here.
Long way to go. Paul, do you think those potentially Democratic votes, those early lates, as we call them, might change any of these races?
Yeah, I think there's a chance that a couple of them will be changed. We have about 780,000 votes left to count, 472,000 of those out of Maricopa County. So some of these county races where we're looking at some of these swing legislative districts, as well as the Senate race, I think still are, you know, within the balance here. I think the announcement that we heard was actually, I think Ruben Gallego's up by 40,000 votes, not 4,000. So he's still has a pretty sizable lead and has been winning so far in Maricopa County, with the exception of this last drop from last night. So I expect there's still some races that are too close to call, but at this point, it does not look like that the Democrats are going to take either chamber of the state legislature.
Yeah. Okay. So a few things we know, lots we still don't. But it does look like, I think I went up to our political reporter's desk earlier this week and she was writing a story and showed me her headline and it said red wave, right? Like, it's looking like this is going to be a good week for Republicans. What's your reaction to that, Gael? Like, do you think this is as bad as it looks?
Yeah, so I think nationally it is a great year for Republicans. I think Arizona Democrats have a lot to be happy about, though, in that, you know, we continue to move to the left relative to the national environment. Even after all the votes are counted, maybe Donald Trump loses the popular vote after everything's done in California and New York. But right now, he looks on track for a better performance than 2016. If he wins the popular vote, he'll be the first Republican since George W. Bush to actually win it. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at the best Republican year nationally possible. And it still looks like Democrats are going to hold on to the U.S. Senate seat. They might pick up a congressional seat here. The state legislature will remain relatively the same. I think there's a lot in Arizona that, yeah, even in a good Republican year, Republicans before would have absolutely thrashed Democrats for the vast majority of my career in this. And right now it looks, you know, pretty much on the margins the same.
Taking the long view there and the glass half full view.
Yes.
Paul, you are a pollster. The polls heading into this election looked different than the results here, right? Like, we did not, I don't think, expect Donald Trump to win Arizona by these kinds of margins. It looked like it was neck and neck. Are you surprised?
Well, it was trending Trump's way. I think one of the things that we look at with all of the polling is that every time basically we had gone into the field, Trump made gains throughout. And part of that has to do with the fact that there was a significant amount of attacks and negativity in the field. And I think that one of the things that we were talking about is that this two-page ballot really gave people an extended period of time. It took them longer to vote. Mm-hmm. And I think the longer that this race went on, the more that the attacks took hold, the more that it was able to sort of swing the Republicans' way. At the end of the day, they're not. It looks likely that they'll probably have about the same advantage in the state Senate. The Republicans picked up two seats in the state House, but a lot of these races are a lot closer. And so we'll have to see what these drop-offs look like. It's been topsy-turvy election cycle. Post-COVID, we've seen Democrats really overperform and really show up and vote early and participate and really sort of dominate early voting, mm-hmm. With Republicans holding back. We saw a significant uptick in Republican enthusiasm this time around. We saw them return to sort of the norm. So this feels like previous elections prior to 2020, more of what the Arizona that Gael was talking about, with that Republicans were sort of more put together. I also think they put a lot more money into this race. There's paid efforts, door-to-door efforts. I'm hearing examples of seniors in particular getting 5, 6, 7 knocks at the door to make sure that they voted. Mm. I know that there's a paid ballot curing effort by Republicans right now. I think there's a lot more money poured into the race as well.
Gail, what do you make of that? Because there was a lot of talk heading up to the election that the Republican national parties, at least, didn't have a lot of a ground campaign. They had passed it off to Turning Point Action, that Democrats might dominate in that arena. Do you think that's not what happened?
I mean, Turning Point Action is based out of Arizona.
Right.
And so I think you saw a lot of investment from them here. You know, on both sides of the aisle, there was a ton of money poured into these races. And I think, you know, to Paul's point, there was a ton of negativity and a real focus on, I think, you know, shifting and widening that gender gap, taking advantage of a lot of the dissatisfaction and the appetite for change that was out there.
I want to talk about the demographic shifts that we saw in this election in terms of the numbers. I know a lot of this is based on exit polling, so you're welcome to say we don't know yet. But Paul, you're the pollster in the studio today. So talk a little bit about who showed up for Trump. Like, we're hearing a lot about kind of a broad and expanded and more diverse Republican coalition this election than has existed in the past.
Well, first of all, I want to be clear that I think it's a Trump coalition, not necessarily a Republican
Interesting.
Coalition.
Interesting.
Okay. And I think that there's things that Trump does that other Republicans don't get away with. There's a reason why Trump is winning the state and Kerry Lake is not. But it did seem to help down ballot. I stand corrected. I had often said that Trump doesn't have very long coattails, that it was all about him and that he didn't really bring other people across. But we do see down ballot Republicans in Maricopa County and in several of these swing districts doing better than we, I think, originally anticipated. But I think in particular, there's some target demographics that he did much better with, one of which is men. You know, they were spending $25,000 per commercial to be in all these sporting events, and they were very male-focused messaging about the economy, about immigration, about other items that I think really probably pushed his number pretty high in the male audience, recognizing that Harris was doing better among female respondents, particularly with abortion on the ballot. I think they played a lot into attracting males to the cause. And I think the other thing that they did is that they got a better portion of younger voters than I think people expected. That'll probably shift a little bit with these drop-offs because I think they'll trend much younger. But in the energized and enthused younger voters, and maybe not as young as we're thinking, not necessarily college age, but like 30 to 39-year-olds, which have generally been more progressive-leaning, I think in that area they made some inroads as well.
Okay, let me ask you about women here, right? We saw, at least from what we're seeing so far, fewer women voting for Harris than Democrats usually get. And that's with abortion on the ballot in Arizona. What do you think happened here?
So I think one thing that we saw is abortion is a winner, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's an issue that Arizonans across the political spectrum believe that there is a right to, very affirmatively. And I think, you know, one of the downsides perhaps for Democrats is that because they had the outlet to enshrine that in the Constitution, the necessity that they felt to make that decision on candidates was a little bit lessened because they saw, hey, here I'm making it happen. Now, of course, you know, federally, if they decide to do a national abortion ban, that would supersede this constitutional change. But I still think that this is an issue that was a big driver. I think, once again, you know, when all the ballots are counted and, you know, once we get a better sense than unreliable exit polls, you're still going to see a pretty big gender gap in women in very large numbers supporting Democrats.
Was the play toward men, Paul, a little bit risky? Because am I wrong? Like, don't women traditionally vote in higher numbers than men?
Yes. women make up at least 52% of the electorate, and some were saying that it may come up to at least even 53%.
Right.
So the male play is a tougher audience. Early on, I think we saw that Harris was being very competitive in the senior demographic as well, and I think that there was a pretty solid push based on negativity. You saw the rhetoric, particularly around immigration, become even more fiery near the end, and I think that was all in an effort to bring back and try to solidify the senior vote that had been pretty consistent for Republicans for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was part of the gamble as well.
Good morning. It is the show here on KJZZ 91.5. I'm Lauren Gilger. And now back to the Friday newscap. I'm joined this morning by Paul Bentz with High Ground, Gael Esposito with Creosote Partners. And Gael, I want to start with you for this segment. Talk a little bit about the Democratic Party in Arizona and nationally and what this means going forward. Like, I've heard a lot of talk this week that looking at the people who showed up for Trump this week, this assumption that existed for a long time, that minorities, that women voters would stay loyal to the Democratic Party, was wrong, that the issues maybe superseded those kind of loyalties. What do you think?
So I think there is some truth to that. And I think the truth there is there were a lot of problems in this country. Things are expensive. People know someone in their life struggling with addiction. You know, they're are real concerns out there. And I think, you know, Democrats could be doing a better job of focusing on that, of hearing those concerns and actually going back to those roots of a working class and economic message, right? We saw that at the ballot, a initiative that had a huge campaign to undermine the minimum wage went down in like the biggest numbers out of almost any of the propositions,
yeah.
Right? Voters, I think, align with Democrats on issues of economic justice, but we need to deliver for them. And when we think about things like inflation, you know, the number one issue of inflation in Arizona is housing, right? Those housing costs have gone through the roof. People see that. People feel it. People know it. And we need to be taking action on those things if we're going to actually win these voters back and show them that we hear them and we see them and we are going to deliver for them.
Paul, let me ask you specifically about Latino voters. So much talk about this week. And there was a lot of this awareness heading into the election that Trump was making a play specifically for Latino men, that seemed to be working in some ways. I'm seeing exit poll numbers that say, you know, 45-46% of Latinos may have turned out and voted for Trump, which is a big shift from where they have voted in the past. What do you think happened?
That is a big shift. And I think part of it has to do with they've certainly Republicans over the last few years have made concerted efforts to improve communications They also didn't specifically make it about immigration issues. They made it more about economic issues. They also what they weren't spending their time was talking to metropolitan concentrated Latinos, but talking particularly to rural Latinos and other areas where there are large populations that maybe we don't think about. And they're not a homogenous group, just like younger voters, just like independent voters. I think we politically talk about them, that they all feel and think the same way and kind of move in a general direction, but there's different things that motivate them. And I think especially when you talk about the economy and the price of gas and the defensive posture the Democrats took on those topics, I think that they just – it didn't work combined with just the overall negativity. Do you really want four more years of this? Tying Harris to the Biden administration. I don't think there's a lot of leftover enthusiasm for the Biden administration. But look, I mean, throughout this race, she jumped in very late. It was a tightrope walk to begin with. It was very difficult. I don't think Biden was viable. And so they had to do something. But this was always a risky maneuver for Democrats to do. And you have a very known quantity in Trump. And near the end here, it seemed like all they were basically saying is they vote for Harris because she's not Trump. She came out of the convention with the country over party, you know, we're in this together. I'm for everyone. And they sort of lost sight of that and really kind of went to more of just the negative Trump narrative while he's talking about how bad things are and people are feeling it economically. And I think it just had an effect.
Gail, what's your take here, especially on the Latino vote in Arizona?
Yeah. So I think on Paul's last point, you know, the strongest thing Kamala Harris had when she first jumped into this race and when she was at her strongest, those leads looked almost insurmountable, was that she seemed like the different candidate. She seemed like that candidate of change, a break from the past. And she had the easiest path to make that narrative, to make that case and embrace that narrative, right? She was the first person, the first ticket that wouldn't have a Trump, a Bush, or a Biden on it in the last, 30 years.
Long time.
And, you know, I think we missed that opportunity and instead saw her, you know, campaigning with the Cheneys and the Clintons and making it about these larger issues of Trump's personality, all things that we know didn't work. It was a return to this status quo positioning. And I think instead of focusing on those very real issues, those very real things that people were feeling and talking about what we were going to do, we focused on that and we lost. And I think you saw in some very heavily Republican states propositions pass, you know, embracing paid family medical leave, right? In these hardcore Republican states, these traditionally Democratic messages winning with big margins. You saw it with abortion. And instead of going back to those bread and butter issues, we, you know, saw this embrace of what has been happening for the last 25 years or more.
Well, and one thing to note is both in Maricopa County and Pinal County, where Trump won pretty handily, both counties passed their extensions of their transportation tax.
Yep.
So it's not that voters voted no on everything. Proposition 486, the Maricopa Community College, also passed the continuation of their expenditure increase. I mean, there's things that it's – so these voters were picking and choosing on issues, and we're more issue-driven. And so there's a – you know, right now there is a Trump – Gallego, abortion, immigration, transportation tax voter out there. And they're not a small minority. It's a pretty decent sized group in the state.
Is that hopeful in some way in the sense that do you both feel like as people who are very plugged into politics that voters might be paying more attention than we give them credit for sometimes?
Oh, I always think voters are paying more attention than we give them credit. And I think, you know, the legislature flooded the ballot with a bunch of propositions, and they all thought they were going to sneak one of those past the goalposts. And they really didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, all their attacks on the initiative process failed. You know, I think we need to be giving voters more credit and embrace the fact that, you know, they have idiosyncratic positions. They don't fit neatly. And the way that, you know, our political brains sometimes think about this of like, oh, you know, you have to be more moderate, and that means, you know, doing this centrist nonsense. That's not exactly how a voter works. They have these very divergent opinions that fit neatly into very different camps, and they make that known in how they vote.
What does that say, Paul, about the two-party system and where the parties both stand right now, which, you know, looks like the Republicans are already in the midst of or maybe passed a pretty big realignment, and the Democrats might be looking at one?
Well, yeah, certainly. I think we're looking at realignments for both. I heard Bernie Sanders is one of the biggest critics of what the Democrats did in this cycle. And I think that there'll be a lot of people who agree with him. I'm not necessarily sure, as somebody who sees how Democrats win Arizona, I'm not sure it's a winning strategy for Arizona, but people may disagree with that. But we've seen the realignment with Republicans. And one of the big takeaways is I think they're both going to walk away from this thinking that they were right. Republicans are going to walk away watching Prop 314, the immigration issue, pass and say, see, we were right on that. Democrats are going to walk away from Prop 139 passing, the abortion issue, and say, we were right. But that's the problem, is they focused on those two topics so much in their primaries because that's what their primary audience cares about. But we saw in the general election that the general election people cared about a different set of issues and can be spoken to. So that's the challenge that we have. Certainly there was some momentum for Trump, and there's probably a few different reasons for that. But, you know, the folks that are walking away today saying all is lost, we're not going to do anything on any topic, education, water, or otherwise, I think there's still opportunities out there based on what our electorate did.
Do you agree on that? And good to end in our last couple of minutes here on a forward-looking question, Gael. Do you think, especially looking at the potential makeup of what the state legislature and state government will look like going forward, we're going to see some potential for compromise?
I think we continue to see that. You know, on issues of housing, we saw bipartisan majorities passing big changes there that hopefully in the long term will bring down costs. Hopefully we can see more of that, I think, on water, too. You know, hopefully we can get these things done. But I think, once again, it's not necessarily about just doing something to do it. It's about embracing what voters care about and doing something different and trying something new and just actually showing that you hear them. And I think whatever party does a better job of that is going to win in the next couple of cycles.
Okay, we have a minute left. I'm going to ask you both what your predictions are for a couple of these very tight races, particularly looking at the race between Kirsten Engel and Juan Ciscomani in Southern Arizona. It's incredibly close right now. Any predictions from either of you about which way that one will go and any others that you think might change?
You know, a lot of people always count Kirsten Engel out in every single election that she has, and they're always surprised when she overperforms. And so I am going to bet on her because I think she's earned it by now.
Okay, Paul?
That seat goes for traditionally, has even 10 years ago, went for Democrats in the presidential year, Republicans for the gubernatorial cycle. So I think we'll see, maybe potentially she has a chance to hold on. I do think Gallego ends up winning this race. I think that 40,000 vote lead is probably enough to hold on. It will narrow some, but I think at the end of the day, Gallego will win.
Let me ask you before I let you go, Gael, why do you think that race in particular seemed to be an exception to the rule here and what's happening in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few different things. I think we saw some good numbers from Democrats out of Pima County overall. I think in the legislative district level, LD-17 was a very big bright spot for Democrats, where it looks like they're going to flip a couple of seats there. And I think, you know, once again, Kirsten Engel is a really good candidate, and she works hard and she has a compelling message. And, you know, I think Arizona voters, you know, like that type of person who, like, shows up and focuses on those bread and butter issues.
All right. That is our Friday newscap for today. We have Gael Esposito with Creosote Partners, High Ground's Paul Vence joining us. Thank you both for coming in. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the biggest stories of the week with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Lauren Gilger. Thanks for listening.